Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. What would you like to create in your life? Are you interested in having incredible health, or learning to trust your intuition, or finding a purpose in your life? These are things everyone would want. And Aware is committed to bringing you this information to assist you in creating a life you love. We invite you to share in this experience and become more aware.
Good afternoon and welcome to Aware. I am really looking forward to today's show. I think I say that every day because we have heard from vegans and vegetarians on the show. We've heard from ex-cattle ranchers turned vegetarians and raw foodists and all sorts of really incredible radical nutritionists. And why stop there? Basically, today we're going to hear another radically opposing view to basically nutrition as we know it and our bodies as we know it, because I believe we need to represent all sides of the picture so that you can be informed and you can make your own choices about your health. And this one pretty much we've eliminated. So we are going to be talking today with internationally known, I guess, body electrician is what you are known as, Denny Hiestand. He has 40 years of experience in engineering, agricultural science, and nutrition is his background. He is one of the world's leading authorities on the electrical causes and connections that our foods and our bodies combined, and also that disease combines. He is a natural health professional who has treated more than 10,000 international clients. He holds an intriguing combination of qualifications ranging from the completion of energy mastery to cell electrology. I think I said that correct or not. He holds a certificate in lymphology, which is now recognized as a medical science by the United States Supreme Court. And he is also the founder of the International Academy of Vibrational Medicine, Medical Science, which instructs doctors and health professionals and laypersons about the electrical components of the physical body. I'd like to welcome in studio Denny and his wife, Shelley Hiestand. Welcome, both of you.
Thanks, Lisa.
I could go on.
Thank you very much.
About this, the intro here, but I won't get people lost, and I'll get them to enjoy exactly who you are. So tell me about some of your theories. Let's start off here about why we as a society and a culture have developed a lot of these new 20th century type of illnesses.
Oh, goodness gracious. I hope you've got 24 hours.
We only have an hour to get all your information in. He talks fast.
However, I don't think what we've got here with our new book, Our Electrical Nutrition, is that radical, or my ideas are that radical. In fact, the possibly we're probably the most unradical nutritionists ever written, because I come from an agricultural science-based background. I'm actually hands-on agricultural, so I owned 500 milking cows in New Zealand, where we pasture feed our cows, and so our cows' health is intricately indexed to the health of the whole natural process. And so that's where I come from in my understanding of how to maintain a healthy body. And I got interested in this whole field of human nutrition when my body crashed and burned just on about 17 years ago, and I rebuilt my body. One of the things that I wanted to do when I was young, I thought I was pretty awesome. And about 18 or so, 19, you know, when us guys think back, and, you know, when we were 18, we were pretty awesome. We could, you know, have multiple orgasms. You name it, it was not much problems. And then by the time, of course, we get to 30s and our 40s, we all of a sudden that is gone. Well, I'm 51 this year, and I've rebuilt myself back to better than I was 18. And Shelley's sitting right here, so she might even have a comment on that one. So I think I know what I'm doing. And, yeah, with 10,000 clients now around the world, we've had a good look at why the body malfunctions, and looking at it, why our science hasn't worked, why our nutrition hasn't worked. And of course, when I come to America, I was just shocked. The North America, particularly the United States, has the worst food in the world. It has the best medical care system, so-called, in the world. It's certainly the most expensive medical care system in the world, but there is more degeneration in North America. There is more degenerative illnesses, and there is more obesity. There is more sickness in the North American continent than anywhere else in the world. And that is including the third world countries for the degenerative diseases, because the third world countries actually haven't got much degenerative diseases at all. So the United States of America is leading the world in its disease state. So therefore, what we've eaten and what we thought was good science is obviously very, very wrong. One of the things that really hit me when I first came to the United States has actually got the most fat-free diet of any nation in the developed country.
Yeah, we spend more than $9 billion on weight loss a year.
Exactly.
I read that the other day.
You have the most fat-free diet of any country in the Western world, yet you have the most obesity in the world.
Right.
Can you, not only in the world, the most obesity ever in the human experience on Earth. Now, it doesn't take, surely, to be a nuclear scientist to figure out we ain't got that one wrong. So obviously fat wasn't causing the problem, and it never has and it never will. In agriculture, how do you fatten up the heifer on the farm? You feed it grain. How do you fatten up the hog on the farm? You feed it grain. How do you fatten up this human body? Feed it grain. Grain is the only thing that the body can actually lay down cellulite with. It lays down a little bit of cellulite from sugar, but 99% of the cellulite lay down is actually from grain. We've known that in agriculture science for over 70 years.
Your book said that that cellulite is the deposit place for fat and for carbohydrates, is that right?
Grain-based carbohydrates get laid down into cellulite in your body, into your fat tissue. That's the only thing that creates your thighs. It's grain.
The cellulite on your thighs,
and,
yeah.
The old farm saying is grain for gain, put mm-hmm. on weight, and protein for production. If you want to be fit, healthy, vigorous, and vitality, and have everything work in your body, you've got to have protein. If you want to be sluggish, fat, and clogged up, have carbohydrate, have grain. It's that simple. And this is nothing new. This is not new science. This is very, very old science. But sadly, in the United States of America, nobody's been told the truth about nutrition. Because, you see, grain, you've got to understand, this body of ours, the stomach is a rotting tank. The only way our food becomes our life force is through a process of fermentation. Digestion is Latin for rotting.
Huh.
And so the only way the energy, the electrical component of the molecule of the food, the protein molecule of the food, becomes our life force is goes through this fermentative process. Then it becomes electrically alive, and that spark of energy then can transfer into our life force. Now, grain, nature-made grain, so it will never, ever rot. It can't rot by nature's design. It can get washed away in a flood down a river, the seed head. It can be buried under 6 feet of snow. It doesn't decay. Nature designed it not to rot, because the grain is the life force of the next generation of plant. It only germinates at a very specific environmental conditions, and that sprout is then protein for the animals. The greenery, the sprout, the grasses are the protein, the complex proteins for the animals. We can't get the protein from the grasses very well because we haven't got multiple and big long digestive tracts like animals have. We're omnivores. We're more in a carnivore type digestive tract. So nature designed and wrapped up grain in a fibrous tissue that can never rot. And you put it into your rotting tank. Your body's got to rot it in 3 hours. It's a physical, biological, electrical impossibility. So the only thing the body can do is then put it into storage.
So the body stores it. I was thinking that if this is a live sprouted thing, that it could regenerate or cause live sprouting within our body. I mean,
a seed head, it doesn't sprout. That's a process of growing, of sprouting, which is in the ground. It's a totally different process of what's happened in our body.
So the body stores it?
The body can only store it. It cannot use it for energy. It has to lay down cellulite. That's how you fatten up animals. That's how you fatten up us. Feed it grain, and we get fat. Period.
So the title of your book is Electrical Nutrition. Explain our bodies as an electrical process first, and digestion as an electrical process, so we can understand how this is working.
Okay, for a start, our bodies are made out of cells. Cells are made out of atoms, and atoms are nothing except vibrating frequencies of energy. That's all we are, one big, massive electrical process that we, at a frequency that we perceive us as physical. Everything is energy in this universe. And so if we're energy, every process that happens is an electrical interface, period. It's an electrical communication taking place. When we eat food, our body never utilizes the food the way our eyes see it. The body is only interested in the protein molecule or the core inside the cell of the food. and it's got to rot the cell open, or rot the fibrous tissue, which is the cellulose content of the cell wall, open, so that protein molecule from the inside of the cell of the food then is available and it gets extracted into our bloodstream. See, the food never gets into our bloodstream. It's only the little protein atom, basically, the protein molecule inside the cell of the food that gets into our bloodstream. From there, it gets pumped around by our heart, right down to our toes, escapes from the capillaries into the lymphatic fluid, and then fires an electrical spark, which contains the energy or the frequency of the food or the life force in the food, and that spark then becomes our life force. It transfers the energy electrically, not biologically. There's some of the cells get delivered to, or some of the food gets delivered to the cells directly through the capillaries, but the energy transfer is an electrical process. Just like when people are hearing my voice now, how did it get to their radio? How did it get to their ears? Through a waveform. And it's only when you're on that same frequency as that waveform can you experience the information contained in the waveform. So all of the information of the food, the life force in the food, was contained on the waveform, on the frequency. That is the energy transferred to our life force.
Now, how do you explain the vibrational frequency of vegetables? You have a rock-to-root theory.
Oh, that's simple. All life on this planet Earth started off as a rock. All life. But as a rock, the vibrating frequency of the rock, the elements and the minerals in the rock are unavailable to us. So we couldn't evolve here just as rocks, by eating rocks. You know, we die eating rocks. You know, let's face it, if anybody wants to try that one, they will find out that very quickly. My science is not wrong here. It's not my science. It's the way things are. And the lichen then gnawed into the rock, and the dying, decaying, and the poops of the lichen and their decaying bodies allowed soil to slowly develop and other microbacteria develop. And they kept eating and eating and eating and created soil, and so the rock then become this live soil, and then the plants were able to grow, because the plants actually don't live in soil. They live on the decaying bodies and the poops of the microbacteria in the soil. I'm a soil scientist. This is how it works. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so then the plants uptake that energy. Now, what was the bacteria was once the rock. So now the rock has evolved into a higher frequency that now the plants can evolve. So the plants uptake that, and they take that frequency of the nutrition now into their life force, into their body, which is the leaf and the plant and the sprouts and the grasses. So now the rock now is a growing thing. It's just that same nutrition content now is at a higher vibration frequency. Only when the plants grew and established that the animals were able to evolve. And the animals then eat the plant tissue and increase its vibratory rate once more into their tissue. And once the animals evolved, then we could come here and evolve from that, because we're at the highest level of the food chain. When you look at the whole energy spectrum, which we can measure the amount of electrons in everything nowadays with science, the animal is the next step down from us, and the plant kingdom is two steps down from us. It's actually three steps down from our body. So if you look at it from a chakra energy system, there are seven steps of evolution. There's seven frequencies our bodies work on. Us human beings are at the top of that level. And for us to eat the animals is the most highest vibratory rate, the most electrons container, then the vegetable kingdom, and then some of the microbacteria, then the rock. So it's an evolutionary process, and we can't eat the rock. We have to have the most life force, we have to eat the highest vibratory rate food. That is animal protein.
So now, this is why I say that you're controversial, because I should say, on the Aware Show controversy, we've had a lot of people who've talked about vegetarianism. We've only had a few that have talked about protein. Mm-hmm. Now, you say that the vibrational rate of animal protein is higher than the vibrational rate of vegetable protein. Let me see if I'm understanding this right. Because of the theory of evolution that you just explained, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a theory. This is the way it is structured. This is all a total measurable science. There's nothing in electrical nutrition, nothing that is actually not a measurable science. I'm an agriculture scientist. This is not conjecture. This is not a belief structure. The people who believe vegetarianism or vegetation contains a higher life force than animal protein have got no basis in science in any way, shape, or form you want to look at. It does not exist. In fact, if you look at just purely this one point, out of all the vegetation on planet Earth, only 2% of it is edible by the human body. And that is called, the old word for that is called herb, which in Hebrew means edible vegetation. Out of all the plants, all the trees, all the leaves, everything that grows on planet Earth, only 2% of it is edible by the human body. The rest will probably kill you or give you a big gut ache in the process. So we do not relate to the vegetable kingdom at all.
Vegetables and broccoli and so forth?
They are the herbs. That's where the original word herb comes. They are the edible vegetation.
Okay, good.
You understand?
Yeah.
But there's not one animal whose flesh on this earth is toxic to the human body.
Well, now, what about these theories of the RNA and the DNA of an animal being different than the RNA and DNA of a human being?
Well, it is slightly different, but it's a hell of a lot closer than what a vegetable is.
But an
animal is a vegetable running around. A vegetable is a growing rock. You understand?
That's a great concept. So now, the digestion process. I have heard many times on the show that it takes animal protein up to 3 days to digest in the stomach. Is that what do you feel about that?
If you've got such a poorly endowed stomach system, that you've lost your enzymatic activity and lost your bacterial content of your fermentation tank, that may well be so. In fact, there are very few human beings that are alive if things took three days to digest. Your body actually deals with it in about 3 hours. Fermentation process.
Should.
And if you've got a problem, it's not the food that's the problem, it's your digestive tank, which is like a septic tank. Your stomach is a fermenter. That's all it is. It's a septic tank. It's a digester. That's what the Latin word means. It's digestion, means rotting, controlled rotting. That's the process that takes place. And that takes place in about 3 hours. In fact, raw meat is the quickest thing to digest. Now, I have so many people argue this. Look, let's face it. Put a rock out on the sun. Uh-huh. Next to it, put a potato. Next to it, put a carrot. Next to it, put some leafy green vegetables. Next to it, put some fruit. Then put some animal protein, some milk or some meat, and see which rots the quickest. And right down by the rock, you've got this pile of wheat. That's still not rotted in 6 months' time. Go out the Midwest and see massive mountains of wheat under the snow in the wintertime. It doesn't rot. What rots the first? The animal protein, then the fruits. And some of the vegetables don't rot for months and months and months. Mm-hmm. In fact, a carrot will sit there and basically won't even decay for 6 months. It'll dry out and shrivel up, but it won't decay. Wheat, 3 years later, it is still sitting there undecayed. It doesn't rot easily. That's what I'm talking about. The body, the life force is actually measured by its level of quickness of decay in a natural environment. And so that is, the more alive it is, the quicker it rots. Simple. It's basic science.
Oh, so you're saying that the meat and the animal products are more alive, so they're
way more alive. In fact, when we look at the electrons contained in it, we're talking a difference between about 1,000 electrons than about 10 trillion electrons in meat. The meat is just power. It is life force. It is a rock running around. Vegetables are a rock growing, but they're not running around. They're not as alive as the next stage of evolution.
Well, we cook the meats. I mean, that changes the structure of the
meats. Okay, cooking is a preserving process in essence, yes. However, by cooking the meat, it still doesn't slow it down to the rotting ability is what most vegetables are. That's known. However, the more raw you have your animal protein, the better it is for you, yes.
That's what we've heard most of.
Oh, absolutely.
And also not mixing the protein with the carbohydrate, with the crude carbohydrate.
Now, you have a theory on the food combining.
Okay, it's not a theory.
No,
it's what we've known in agriculture for over 70 years. A farmer never puts corn silage, which is a preserving process, corn in the same silo as fresh green grass, because corn is a carbohydrate and fresh green grass is a protein. As I said before, the sprout is protein. That's why the animals perform when they eat the sprouts. When you want to fatten up the cattle in the wintertime, you feed them grain. When you want them in the springtime to be calved and to milk, to be fit and healthy, you feed them protein. You don't feed them much grain in. If you want to fatten them up for slaughter, you feed them grain. You want to have them fit and healthy, racehorse, you give it grass. That's why New Zealand racehorses do so well, because they're brought up in grass. So the process of giving the food the right protein level and not mixing the protein and carbohydrate is crucial, because if we put the corn and the grass in the same silo, we'd have about 10 feet of rot, which would make the cows sick. Yet every time we eat potato and meat or hamburger bun and the hamburger meat at the same time in our fermentation tank, we're creating the same electrical chaos.
So
if you want degenerative heart disease, 100% of it is caused by mixing your proteins and carbohydrates.
So what should we do? We should do.
Just have your meat with your vegetables, or have your carbohydrate with your vegetables, separate from each other. That's, you have vegetables with everything else, but just separate your crude proteins and crude carbohydrates. It's amazingly simple. It's unbelievable. You will get an instant 50% increase in vitality just by allowing the digestion, which takes 80% of your body's energy system, to operate more efficiently, because it doesn't have to work so hard. So if it's taking 80% of your internal energy system to try to ferment the crud that you're putting in there, if you make it easy for it, instantly you've got about another 30 to 50% more vitality available to you. So have your protein with some veggies. Have your carbs with some veggies. The other thing is, in farming and agriculture science, not only obesity is grain cause, but adult onset diabetes is 100% grain toxicity. Joint degeneration, arthritis is 100% grain toxicity. So we can look at the whole range of the degenerative diseases here in North America, and it's indexed 100% to this absurd level of grain intake. Because you've got to understand, we were never farmers. The human race has never been farmers. We've been hunter-gatherers. My goodness gracious, we didn't start agriculture in a big way until John Deere made the steel toe of the plow a couple of hundred years ago, or less. You know, he's an American. It was modern technology that allowed us to farm, to grow grain. Grain was never... Go back into ancient England. What did you get killed for? Poaching. What were you poaching? By shooting the pheasant or the rabbit, hunting the rabbit. Does anybody know, and anybody in ancient England got fined or put in jail for stealing a bit of corn? No. Who were the richest people in ancient Egypt? Were they the grain farmers? No, they were the sheep and goat herders who were the wealthy people. Why? Because they produced the protein for the population. They understood the value of that. Why is the cow sacred in India? Because in the Indian subcontinent, protein production is very, very difficult because it's got poor soils and the environment doesn't help animal production. So they made the cow sacred because the cow gave the milk and a calf every year. So you could have that very, very valuable protein source, and that's why she was made sacred.
Well, there's also the issue of those other countries having a lot more standard farming systems than we have here. Our farming systems are completely substandard with antibiotics and hormones and pesticides and all the things that are used in the water and the feed and the rendering and all of that.
Okay, but look at this one. From an agriculturist point of view, the most sprayed crop in the world in any agriculture system is wheat.
Yeah, I guess
the next most sprayed crop is apple orchards. In fact, the animal production system has overall the least amount of toxic inputs in modern agriculture than any other crop growing process, because an animal is a live being. And its growth phase is spread over 2 or 3 years. So you've got to keep it a lot longer, so it's got to be healthy, otherwise it dies.
Well, there are.
Where you're growing a plant, a cereal crop, that's only a 3 to 4 month process. You can fill it up with all sorts of things and create an incredible, good-looking thing out of it, but it's nutritionally devoid.
There are so many pesticides and antibiotics that are put into farming.
I'm a farmer. I know you can't. 99% of the people, who are saying these things have never, ever been on a farm. They've never lived on a farm. They've never lived, breathed, worked, and survived economically, brought up a family on a farm. I have spent all my time in agriculture. I know New Zealand agriculture. I know Australian agriculture. I know North American agriculture.
As well?
I'm talking about the whole spectrum. I grew 1,000 acres of oats and wheat 1 year. I know what I'm doing. I know the inputs in agriculture. I've been living and breathing agriculture. To say that the animal production system is the most toxic is a straight up lie. Yes, there is some
inputs.
In
New Zealand, it isn't.
No. Even in North America, and I've done many studies on North American agriculture. In fact, I spent 5 weeks over here on a study tour looking at North American agriculture, and I've been over here now for 7 years. So you know, I'm not stupid. The production system, if you want to look at the most dirtiest of the animal production system, is what most North Americans think is the good choice, which is commercial chicken. Now, you won't pay me to eat commercial chicken, because that is the only animal production system that gets antibiotics and hormones on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And even in the dairy industry, only 3% of the national herd gets a little bit of female hormone to increase.
What about the beef industry?
The beef industry, the prime beef industry gets very, very little. The bull beef industry, however, gets a lot. And that meat goes into the ground beef market. And that's the beauty of electrical nutrition. This is the first health book written by an agriculturalist who knows the system, who lived and breathed farming, and I explain production systems. I explain what is a production system, how you produce these meats, what grades of animal produce what grades of meat. So people can read it finally, for the first time, we've actually got some knowledge that you can make a choice in. If you go to the prime beef, if you stay with the three top steaks, if you stay with the organics, if you stay with this, And I explain the production system so you can make a choice of what is clean food and what is not. But the animal production system is actually less toxic, less chemicals, less hormones than ever is the actual grain and most of the vegetable production systems.
I believe this in organics to be true. Are you familiar with the man who won the veggie libel suit with Oprah, Howard Lyman?
Yes.
He was an ex-cattle rancher who had done all of these, all sorts of, for 40 years, he was raising cattle in these types of antibiotic atmospheres, and he had seen and done that stuff firsthand, and that was
when you actually read his book, which I've read his book,
he's been on the show many times.
He actually doesn't make, he's got some inequities in his information. He's jumped onto this bandwagon. Yes, the production system is nowhere near as good as it should be, nowhere near as good as it could,
absolutely.
But in fact, overall, it is nowhere near as some of the vegetable growing regimes. Vegetables by far get more toxic chemicals on vegetable growing soil, and wheat is by far the worst.
Well, he wasn't talking about the vegetable type of farming. He was specifically talking about what he knew.
Yep.
But in terms of vegetable farming, what type of meals can we eat that are electrically available to us?
We have to eat them. There's only one thing I keep telling everybody, and we've had major success with disease degeneration or disease reversal processes. Simple. Look at the food before you buy it and ask yourself one question. Is the way I'm going to eat it the way nature made it? You see, nature, the human body, has evolved in nature for 3 billion years. It's a process of evolution. So as I said right at the start, the electrical matrix, or the way the protons and neutrons are put together in food, is the only way our body can recognize nourishment. So as soon as human beings change any component of that electrical matrix, the body can't recognize it as nourishment, so therefore it's going to be a toxin. So the food you buy, the food you eat, has got to be as close as possible to the way nature made it. So that's simple. So stay with the organic foods and eat it the way nature made it, as close as possible. If it's been modified, it's been changed, like tofu is a neurotoxin. Tofu is a thyroid inhibitor. Nature never made tofu. Have you anybody seen a tofu tree?
What, tofu is made out of soybeans?
Well, that was the feedstock of soybean. The nature's wonderful bean, a soybean. And in North America here, I get so many things that, oh, what about all this genetic manipulation of our animals and everything else? And I said, well, where did genetic manipulation start? We started ciders. We started with a soybean 20 years ago. There's no such thing as a natural soybean on Earth. They don't exist. Soybean, we were able to see the genetic structure of a soybean the easiest, so that's all the research was done on soybeans.
So
soybean is the most modified food on Earth. There's no question about that. But nature made a soybean until man got and played with it. And but tofu is not a soybean. The body has no ability to recognize that.
Tofu comes from soybeans, right?
Yeah, but its electrical matrix has been totally changed. The body can't recognize that. That's why now...
How has it been changed?
In the process, in the manufacturing process, just like people drink canola oil or cooking canola oil. You know, that's diesel. We can pour it straight into our tractors on the farm and it runs perfectly. It's been heated up to over 400 degrees, four times in its manufacturing process.
Is tofu cooked?
Beg your pardon?
Is tofu cooked?
Tofu is absolutely, if you go to the commercial tofu is not the way of just crunching up some soybean, letting it ferment over 3 days and squeezing out the whey like old great-grandma used to make it. No, the commercial tofu is nothing like that.
Oh,
so the electrical matrix has totally changed. They actually strip the molecule by molecule, all the components, and take bits out and recombine it totally differently. It is not, nature cannot, your body cannot recognize. And that's why the science has just come out now. I read a major report not even 2 weeks ago, and then I've been saying this for 20 years. And here now the science is catching up with me from what I've known from agriculture science, that tofu is a thyroid inhibitor. Now, one of the kids bounce off the wall when you feed them tofu drinks and tofu all their life. It completely blows the mother gland out, which controls our whole emotional center.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. I am speaking with Denis Hystand, who's very hot under the collar about this topic, on his book, Electrical Nutrition. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about what causes a low sex drive in us. It's very interesting. I'm sure he'll have his opinions on that. We're going to switch from animals to sex drive. You're listening to Lisa Garr. I am talking on The Aware Show. And this is KPFK. Welcome back to Aware. I'm Lisa Garr, and we have been speaking with Denny and Shelley, he's Dan, of a book called Electrical Nutrition. Now, they are going to be speaking at the Bodhi Tree Bookstore this weekend. On Sunday night, you're doing a book signing, and on Monday night, you're doing a workshop. So if you have questions and so forth, not only can you call the station, you're more than welcome to call the station, 818-985-KPFK, and you can talk to Denny directly on the air. We'll give out the information for the Bodhi Tree signing and workshop later. So I have a question for you. So now here's the situation where you've talked about animal protein, and we haven't had this perspective on the show yet to talk about animal protein. I really felt to do a balance on this is appropriate. Give me, if I'm perceiving this correctly, that you're saying that the vibrational energy from animal protein feeds us nutritionally because it matches the vibrational energy of a human being more than, and in addition to, vegetables, which have a little bit of a lower vibration, yet they are still helpful to our body, but we should not eliminate protein because it has the highest vibrational resource. How do you measure vibrational resources in animal protein, vegetables? How do you measure that stuff?
The easiest way to actually measure that is by its rotting ability. That which rots the quickest is the most
alive.
Evolved, the most alive. Now then, from another scientific point, we can measure the amount of electrons in the fluid. If you made everything into a liquid, you can measure the amount of oxygen reduction potential, or the amount, in essence, the amount of electrons in it. And we know that the human flesh has got the most electrons in it, animal flesh is the next, or animal protein is the next, then vegetables, and there's a huge range in vegetables. Some vegetables are very good, and some vegetables are a disaster that just don't give their life force up. You see, the life force that we have, our ability to be alive here, is purely related to the amount of what frequencies of energy that interface with us. That's how we get nourished. You see, and for 3 billion years we've been hunter-gatherers. We've never evolved eating grain. In fact, grain, we didn't have grain. We weren't farmers until the last 150 years in a big way. So no culture on earth has ever evolved in a high grain environment. We had a few fruits, we had some berries, and we had animal protein, period. So that's our evolutionary trait, or our evolutionary ability to be alive. So from a science point of view, it's not even a debate, it's not even an argument. Anybody who thinks vegetarian is the best, highest vibratory rate, the most life force choice of eating food, are actually believing in a belief structure and not science. There is no science to back that up. In fact, I did a radio show with Lance Dreher, the ex-former Mr. America, a brilliant, brilliant athlete, and he held up and he shook the book Electrical Nutrition. He said, everybody should read this book by law. He said, we should pass a law in Congress to make people read this book, because he came to the same conclusion when his body crashed and burned, and I've done many, many top athletes, many, many top dancers, and they all crash and burn with lack of good protein. Now, you can get protein from other sources other than animal protein, but it's very, very difficult. Electrical Nutrition is not an anti-vegetarian book. All as I'm talking about is the science of how this body works electrically. Nobody's ever gone there before. This is the quantum physics. This is quantum science. This is actually no belief structures. This is what happens when you eat. It's an electrical process takes place when you. And your body gets nourished through an electrical process, and every component of that electrical process either gives you your health or gives you your disease state. Disease is self-inflicted. You do not catch cancer. You do not catch angina. You do not catch clogged arteries. You do not catch low libido. You do not catch obesity. You do not catch cancer. Every one of these things are self-inflicted degeneration. Mm-hmm. Self-inflicted degeneration. We degenerate because the foods we eat and we clug ourselves up and we don't move enough and we drink electrically dead water. All of these factors we address in electrical nutrition, and particularly that one about libido, because in New Zealand, in agriculture science, since 1972, the biggest dairy herd breeding system in the world in New Zealand looked at the live sperm count per milliliters of fluid. And we made the 1972 as the mean. And we measured the humans also, and so did the Americans. And since 1972, we have kept our dairy industry at the bulls with a live sperm count with plus or minus 3%, because we perceive that that is the level. If it drops 3%, the red alarm would go off and say, hey, we're not feeding our animals properly. We have got a degenerative process happening here. In North American males, since 1972, the live sperm count has dropped 50%. Now, who knows about nutrition? Us New Zealand farmers or your North American doctors? You have lost half of your life force. We have kept ours exactly where it was for the last 30 years.
This could also have to do with the stress levels in North America.
No, 90% of it is nutrition. 90% of it is nutrition, because we change that nutritional base.
Well, stress levels
affect
nutrition.
And instantly it comes up. Your stress levels has a level of performance, but not so much on live sperm count. Live sperm count is purely because the body, the second chakra, is one of the major electrical feeds in the body, and that's where the body will show. That's why we test it in animals. That's where the body will show first of any decrease in life force.
There are so many ads out there for Viagras and herbal sexual stimulants and so forth. What you're saying is that our libido can be increased by eating meat? I'm going to say organic meat, because I'm really going to stick with that.
I haven't got a problem with that.
Okay.
But I would even go one stage further, not necessarily meat, but adequate levels of electrically available protein.
Okay. That makes sense. So which can also be found in...
There can be found in other sources besides animal. However, it's very difficult. But nuts and all of these things, if you ferment them properly or pre-ferment before the human body gets them, you can get adequate levels of protein from it. But you have to know what you're doing. And it's way, way more difficult than most people think. Way more difficult. But that's the essence of it. There's not a man in North America that's middle-aged that is even half the man his grandfather was. Now, if that doesn't worry you, remember... 3% in agriculture, 3% drop in sperm count in agriculture, and we hold up the red flag. A 50% drop in sperm count in the adult male in North America, and nobody's telling you. You're killing yourselves over here. You're killing yourselves with toxic food, the wrong food, not enough movement, electrically unavailable water, all of these things.
Well, let's talk about big business of this, because you had a very interesting concept on going to buy a $5 meal, because economics is a big point. And if we go to buy this type of meal that is a lot less expensive and so forth, we're really getting the lowest quality food. And
it's quite amazing.
That's why organics are more expensive.
Absolutely, and justifiably so too. And buy your organics and pay that farmer well for what he's doing, because he's going to keep you alive.
Yes.
And if you pay three times the price, it's still going to be a lot cheaper than the other stuff. You know, in where I come from, in most of Europe, quality is sought out. The consciousness of food is sought out. In America here, everything is the lowest common denominator. To buy a $5 meal, look, somebody had to hire a building to prepare that meal. They had to pay people to prepare that meal. They had to truck it into that meal. A farmer had to grow it. He had to buy the seed. He had to pay the interest on the land. He had to buy the tractor, the fuel, everything. And still that meal ended up at $5 on your plate.
So most
man,
of your money
oh man,
is...
what's the quality of that? What's gone in to produce it? It's been the lowest common denominator all the time. And that food becomes your life force?
Sometimes I wonder that about fast foods and so forth. Certain food chains, fast food chains, really are going on the economics of it all, and you're paying for the overhead. That $2.99 pays for the overhead, doesn't pay for the quality of what you're getting.
Exactly. The food has got no quality. Understand, your life force is what you put in through your mouth. It even says that in the Bible. The kingdom of heaven is governed by the pearly gates. The word pearls in Hebrew is ivory. Your ivory gates is your mouth. The kingdom of heaven, it says the Lord's Prayer, thy kingdom come. It's inside of us. We are part of this whole matrix. And what we put into this temple, this God-given temple, is if it's not electrically alive, if it's dead, if it doesn't exist, if our body can't relate to it, if it's got no electrons in it, it is not available for our life force. It's purely, people look at me and say, I'm 51, and they say, where do you get that vitality from? Where do you get that power from? Yeah. It's easy, because I eat live food.
I absolutely agree with you on the live foods and whole foods, whole live foods that give us our actual. Now, how
but whole live grain is not live food. Nature deliberately wrapped up grain so it can not rot.
So
your body is a rotting
whole
tank.
Whole live grain is not whole food.
Grain is not food for the human digestive tract. Even our cows can't even, with four stomachs, can't even ferment grain very good.
Now, you do recommend a low-carbohydrate diet. What amount of carbohydrates or types of carbohydrates are good for us?
The starchy tubers are the carbohydrates by choice. So your potatoes, your yams, your pumpkins, your squashes, those type of things are adequate levels of carbohydrate. You know, I love my croissant on a Sunday morning, too, with my coffee a little bit. There's nothing wrong with having a little bit occasionally after you've detoxed the body up, but the grain is the killer in North America. Every bit of fatness, every bit of obesity, everybody's big thighs, everybody's, you know, I got thousands of clients, 15 to 20 pound in the first month just by taking the grain out of the diet and separating the protein from carbohydrates. That's all you need to lose weight. Take the grain out of your diet. Understand the farming. Grain for gain, protein for production. It's that simple. It's not a belief structure out there, people. It's just you are filling yourselves up with a toxic grain. Take the grain out of your diet and guarantee you'll get probably a 50% increase in your vitality just from that alone.
Okay, we're getting this now. I wanted to make sure that we were clear about this. This is not an argument against vegetarianism or pro-meat or whatever. You're saying that these grains are the things that... Okay, so now let me go to a caller. We are speaking, by the way, with Denny and Shelley Hestan. They are the authors of Electrical Nutrition, and there's a few things that you have glossed over that our callers are having questions on, specifically Glenn in Huntington Beach. You have a question for Denny.
Yeah, I'm really, really enjoying your talk. It's just amazing to hear you talk.
Can't hear a thing.
You know, I get kind of burned out on hippie science where people hear things and it feels good and so it must be true. You know, I was in India, and the people in Bengal are the people who do most of the movies and the art and the theater and all that kind of thing, and the holy men and so forth, and they eat fish, you know, and even with their... you know, relatively less protein, they say you need to be following this Hindu way of life that's been worked out for 10,000 years or something. You can't just, you know, take the meat out of your hamburger and think you're a vegetarian. You know, but my question was, what about the Japanese and these systems of alkaline water and negative electron water?
Yeah, the water, we talk about water in electrical nutrition. In fact, I've got quite a bit about that, and you're dead right there. But yeah, one of the things that a lot of people mention India and they're vegetarian and everything else. Well, when you look at the health of the Indians, you know, they haven't got it very right. In fact, one of the things that we do in New Zealand, of course, we play cricket, which is really not known over here, but it's an English game. And all the sporting people, and one of the great Indians were on a television show in New Zealand a few years ago, and he was talking about, you know, and the announcer asked him, you know, well, you know, you're a big stature, you're a very fit, powerful human being. You're not like a normal Indian that we perceive, that we see when you show normal Indians. And he laughed and he chuckled and he says, well, we recognize that factor. And he said, when we're young at school, when we've got good balance and natural good sporting ability, we're actually seen by the system, by the principals of the school there. And then the government or the local area authority gives us a grant or gives the family a grant to actually buy extra protein for those promising kids so they can compete in the world sporting arena. So there you go. You know, even they recognize that to make good, fit, powerful human beings, they've got to have extra protein. And they get actually government grants to do that for their families.
You know, another thing that I found out in India is occasionally there are holy men who live a long, long time, you know, supposedly a real, fantastic long time. And all of those people have always eaten cooked foods. They say if you eat raw food, you're using more energy than you're going to get out of it.
Particularly raw vegetables, yes. In fact, I've got a client in Seattle who's lost two-thirds of his stomach through a genetic disease that, you know, right from young, and raw vegetables will kill him. And that's why a lot of mothers in the first trimester, they even if they're vegetarian mothers, go off vegetables, because vegetables are actually quite toxic. I said there's only 2% of all vegetation that is non-toxic to the human body, and the brassica family is actually quite toxic. Raw broccoli is also a thyroid inhibitor. So yeah, there's a lot of disinformation out there in North America about diet, but yeah, slightly steamed vegetables or stir-fried vegetables are actually a far healthier choice than a lot of raw vegetables, but all animal flesh, of course, can be eaten raw.
Thanks for your call, Glenn. I appreciate it. I wanted to ask you a question, Denny, about the mothers. What would you tell mothers to change children's diets? You mentioned a lot about soda, a lot about cereals, a lot about aspartame and the products that contain aspartame.
Yeah, Electrical Nutrition covers, it's not a diet book for a start, and it's not really a health book in the diet sense. It covers the spectrum of the human experience from an electrical perspective, and I think that's its magic, and that's why it's getting so much fabulous reports around the world. The diet, the soda, look, mothers, you've just got to understand, the only way your children can be healthy, the only way you can be healthy is to give them the correct electrical nourishment. That's the way food, the way nature made it. Look, just think for one minute. Your little children have got digestive tanks. Now open up a can of pop and put it on the counter. How many years is it going to take for that stuff to rot? In 1,000 years' time, that stuff will still not be rotten. And yet you allow your kids to drink that into their fermentation tank. So it's got chemicals in there. It's got stabilizers in there. That will not ferment. The body cannot ever, ever get rid of that toxic loading out of its body. So therefore, the child will have an urge to eat the grain because the body can lay down the cellulite, and that is the toxic waste dump of the body. And we found this out in the 1950s in agriculture, that the cellulite lay down is where the body stores its toxic loading. So the more toxins you pour in, the more you will want to eat the grain and the sweets to lay down the cellulite to store the toxins in. So it's a vicious cycle. It's that simple. Look, It's a simple thing. Read Electrical Nutrition. There's $2 million worth of research in there. It is a powerful, powerful book. I'm a Kiwi farmer. I say it as it is. I don't talk in belief structures. I don't believe in belief structures. All that I've done is written the science in plain, simple, heart-hitting logic.
Okay. I have a caller, Jean from Van Nuys, and Jean has a question for, I'm speaking with Denis and Shelley Hestand, the author of Electrical Nutrition. Jean, do you have a question for Denny?
Yeah, I'm not sure if someone touched on this already. I think the Asian world would be very surprised to hear that grain isn't a food.
I never said grain is not a food. I said our wheat is basically a toxic food. It is relatively dead. It's unfermentable. The Asians have got a different biological structure. They evolved in a different environment, and they've had rice. In fact, they haven't had rice for that long. If you go back in history, now this is another thing that is big disinformation. If you go back in history in Japan and China, where the rice started to be grown, the rice was initially used as the fermentation agent for the fish, and the rice then was discarded or made into sake. That's where they made the first spirits in the world, by the letting the rice rot in the tanks and it would become alcohol. And so the rice was actually not the stable diet. The protein was still the stable diet. We were hunter-gatherers. We couldn't, you know, the cattle weren't domesticated, even to pull a wooden stick through a paddy field until, you know, relatively late in our evolution. So, no, I'm sorry, we have not evolved in a grain type of diet. However, rice is more easier fermentable and has got less gluten and it is less fattening than wheat. Modern wheat is a total disaster. In fact, the biggest health problem, and I know this for a fact, the biggest health problem confronting the Chinese medical authorities at the moment is bowel cancer, and they're trying to figure out how to convince Chinese to eat less modern white rice. There I say it. And that's the science. That is not a belief structure.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Jean. Another caller had a question about the tofu comment. Elizabeth, yeah, I just has a question for Denny. I wanted you to clear this up, Denny. Elizabeth, you have a question?
I'm here. Hello.
Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you made a statement about commercial tofu. I was wondering if you could make the same about organic tofu. Is the manufacturing process the same?
All depends on the manufacturing plant. If you do your tofu in your kitchen yourself and ferment it, squeeze the whey out of it, and eat it, you're probably not doing too bad. But commercial tofu, all is what it says organic, is that means it has been grown without chemical inputs. However, tofu in any shape or form, the latest research out, it is one of the most serious thyroid inhibitors. Now, when you look at the increase in tofu, particularly among our children, with the tofu drinks and somewhat, and a lot of the tofu additives in our food, and we look at the amount of Ritalin or the amount of emotional problems we've got in our children, there could well be a tie-up. That is, without question, scientifically, tofu is a thyroid inhibitor. So it's quite serious potential damage. In fact, the biggest trial that done in Japan 2 years ago that was produced, out of 30,000 tofu eaters, their tofu eaters had the biggest single levels of degeneration out of all of the groups that they tested of this 30,000 person trial. And the biggest thing of tofu, and I've been saying this for 20 years and I didn't have the research until last year, that they said the biggest thing was Alzheimer's, which is, once again, that's why I've always said tofu, actually, when I look at the energy of tofu, it is a neurotoxin. And there the Japanese science come out. One of them, guy was talking about the oldest guy on earth. The oldest guy on earth died last year in 1998, and it wasn't actually published here in the United States, but it was in a full page article in the International Herald Tribune that goes through all of Europe, but it was unreported in the United States because it really showed up a heck of a lot. And that guy lived to 141. The Nepalese government sent a medical team up to his village to ascertain the cause of death, to make sure there's no foul play. And the guy was 141. His diet, and he had no degeneration, no heart problems, no cholesterol problems, no nothing. He ate yak cheese, yak butter, and pork. You do not grow grains in any way, shape, or form at 15,000 feet. And he lived on protein, and he lived to 141.
Now, let me ask you a question about the, and thank you for the call, caller. Is that same thing true with soy? If it was not going through the processes that is needed to make tofu, is that same thing applicable to soy?
Soy sauce, you mean, like in soy liquid?
Soybeans. Soy, you know, natural soy.
If you eat soybeans, they're a pea. They're actually a protein complex. They're a legume. They're a wonderful, wonderful vegetable.
So it's the process in which tofu is made that degenerates the soy.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's not the way nature made it anymore. The body can't recognize the electrical matrix. As soon as you change anything, the body cannot evolution's a slow process. We took 10 billion years to evolve into how we relate electrically to foods. Changing that electrical matrix, and we have an unmitigated chaos disaster happening in the body. And that's exactly why North Americans eat more manufactured, more foods out of packets, tins, that's been changed from the way nature made it than any other society on earth. And it has the greatest level of degeneration ever in human history. You've got to wake up, North America. You are killing yourselves.
Wow. Okay, one more question. We have time for just a few more questions. B from Los Angeles, do you have a question for Denny?
Thank you. It's about milk.
Great.
Bovine growth hormones in it and the mucus and so forth. Should milk be drunk at all?
Okay, we're running out of time. Let's be really straight up with this. Yes. The science, the mucus-causing problem with milk is not a milk problem. It is the biological terrain problem inside the child or inside the human being. It's probably had an antibiotic once in its life. That is, what does the antibiotic say? It says antibiological life form. What is your digestive tank? You're meant to have thousands upon millions of bacteria in there. One antibiotic, once in your life, and you kill all that. And that then, your body cannot ferment food properly, cannot ferment some of the things, and that is then mucus forming as the body trying to get rid of it. That's what the problem is. Not the milk that is the problem. You should drink milk. The oldest guy that I know of in North America is 102 this year. He was dying at 85. There's taken out of hospital by his four brothers who have all since died. He's been drinking 2 glasses of milk a day since. But you've got a big advantage here in California. You can buy raw milk, and that is magic.
Raw organic milk, too.
Raw organic milk as well, yes.
Right, and that's the other thing, is that I noticed that in the body, your body develops a lactose intolerance, and it's not necessarily...
Because of antibiotics, because antibiotics kill the lactose enzymes. I take my enzymes every day of my life, and I take milk every day.
So you take enzymes from a supplement form?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. We have to, because the enzymes don't live in the ground anymore. The soil bacteria has been killed. We have to supplement with high-tech stuff, and that's we mention these things in electrical conditioning. We explain how the body works. We explain what causes the degeneration, and we give you all of the information, how to rebuild it and where to get the stuff from. We name the stuff, everything.
Well, it is covered pretty clearly. Now, I want you to talk about aspartame, specifically about aspartame. You have some really good information about that.
Oh, goodness gracious me. We were very brave or very stupid where you wrote the whole aspartame scenario. Aspartame is NutraSweet and 6 other trade names. It is an artificial sweetener. It is 100% a neurotoxin. Literally everything, Mum, that you feed your kid that come out of a packet, out of a tin, a cookie, a lollipop, an ice cream, or a candy, as you call it over here, has a high chance of having aspartame in it. It's in over 5,000 manufactured food products. Aspartame is a neurotoxin. It will fry your kids' brains. period.
And adults.
And adults. Jackie Kennedy Onassis, on her death certificate, has listed aspartame poisoning. She was a diet drink addict. 12 a day, on average, she had. She died of aspartame poisoning. It fried her brain. She went dry. She died nuts.
I know there are studies linking it to Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease.
It is huge. It is beyond belief that any mother would ever put anything out of a packet or a tin or a drink, or diet drink, that it or even hints that it contains aspartame into a child. It is diabolical stupidity at worst, and it is literally self-induced murder at worst.
The best thing is to really look closely at the labels, and if it lists aspartame, then avoid it as much as possible.
Shelley, we haven't heard from you much.
Well, as you can tell, Denis, once he gets going, he gets going. And he's hard to keep up with too, which is a good sign. I mean, he's 51 and I'm 33, and I find him hard to keep up with.
I've had a hard time getting a word in edgewise. I know how you have as well.
Well, we have a lot of chance at the Bodhi tree, at the book signing and at the workshop, to go into more depth as well. I think he's just so excited to get this information out, because it is so important for the health of humanity to understand how the body works. And there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I'm a reformed vegetarian. I was vegetarian for 13 years too, until I met Denis, and my body had actually fallen apart too, and he convinced me with his logic. It took a while.
Well, I must admit it, and this is the bottom line in my opinion, that it is all based on the individual. I too am an animal protein eater, because I am a competitive athlete, and I have exercised and tried with my own body as my own little experimentation take. And I have tried, my body wants to be a vegetarian. When I put in 50 to 80 miles a day, I cannot function in my mind without getting animal protein into the muscles, because I've learned from experimenting with my own body, it's the only thing that regenerates the muscular breakdown that I do in the daily exercise.
You know what?
That I
when
have.
when you eat vegetative matter, the body, this human body, has to extract the protein molecule from inside that cellulose cell to give it its life force. The body only ever deals with protein. Everything you eat has to be extracted, the protein molecule inside the cell, to become our life force. The liver creates the inner activity to convert that protein molecule into pure fat, and the fat is the only thing that actually delivers its life force to become our life force. Protein is the only thing this human body ever gets to become its life force. Everything gets converted into protein inside the body. So the further you eat away from that protein source, the harder the body has got to do to change it or to extract that protein. That is the science. That is not a debate. It is not a belief structure. That is how the darn thing works.
Okay. I think one of the main keys for me, though, with reintroducing meat back into my diet, was looking at the sources. Like, where does it come from? Happy cows, whether they've been raised out in
nature. Absolutely. They have.
Hugely important.
I'm going to keep saying organic.
Yeah, you're looking at the vibratory rates of foods, and it's how they're grown, whether they're commercial fruits and vegetables grown with people who are paid really low wage, whether they're prepared in the restaurant from people who are paid really low wage. They're all infusing their energy into that food. And it's the same with organics. That's why organics are fantastic to eat. And the same with happy cows or happy chickens, you know. It's like they've all got...
I define a happy chicken.
Yeah. They've all got... it's really important to feel the energy of who's put their energy into the food.
Absolutely. Okay, questions. And I know that there's a lot of callers we haven't gotten to. Here's the information on Denis and Shelley Hestand. You can see them at the Bodhi Tree on Sunday, May 28th, or Monday, May 29th. Sunday is the book signing. Monday is an actual workshop that you can take, and you can ask them questions and all sorts of things. The Bodhi Tree phone number, 310-659-1733. Now, here's the number to get the books, 800-207-2239. If you don't want to call, here's the website, www.vibrationalmedicine.com. You can email Denis and Shelley your questions. That's www.vibrationalmedicine.com.
Of course, the Bodhi Tree's got books as well.
Right. Of course, the Bodhi Tree, and there's Amazon.com. Yeah, there's Amazon. Lots of ways you can get the books. But this is the information if you are interested in it. And I want to thank you so much. I have this really wonderful live couple in my studio here.
Live,
it's great.
Hey, and right. Thank you so much. And I am passionate about it because, you know, I my body crashed and burned when I was 35, and now I'm 51. So, you know, it works.
Have a wonderful weekend. And until then, I invite you to stay aware. Mm.